Great. Okay, so it's a great pleasure tonight to introduce to you Bob Michael as he shares his incredible journey of how he recovered from stage 4 kidney cancer, where the tumor was the size of a football. And I've had the great pleasure of meeting him once before and hearing his inspiring story, greatly inspiring, and I'm thrilled to have you here with us tonight, Bob. So please, take the floor.
All right, Marissa. Thank you so much for being here. I'm honored and blessed to be able to obviously share my story with people. As you indicated, and by the way, thank you and Fia for putting this on. I think it's a marvelous and important vehicle to spread the word about the power of what macrobiotics is all about and how people can take control of their lives and their health if they just, you know, to put a little effort into it, or a lot of effort, depending upon when they jump on board. Back in 2002, I was diagnosed, as you said, with stage 4 kidney cancer. But I think it's important to mention, you know, before that, I was always, or at least I thought I was, the perfect healthy specimen. And I played semi-pro football. I was a police officer for 26 years, always kept myself in what I thought was good shape. And I retired from law enforcement. Obviously, that wasn't the most tranquil job, and it did definitely contribute to the stress that led to the kidney cancer. There's no doubt in my mind that was part of the contributing factor. But when I was diagnosed, I'd never been sick. I hadn't ever been in the hospital, except going there on official business and that type of thing. I was never a patient, and so I really was touted myself as being in good shape physically. And I thought all the years that I did investigations, I was a narcotic officer and ran the narcotic unit, and then I was a homicide investigator and ran a homicide unit. And I was always intrigued with forensic science when we went through an autopsy, and I had physically held hearts and lungs and all kind of organs where they had been shot or stabbed and taken photographs of them. And so I thought I had an integral knowledge of our bodies and our organs and how they function. I really didn't know anything about how they functioned until I got into macrobiotics and what got on the educational circuit to find out about healing myself from cancer. And when I was diagnosed, it was like a total shock. And I found out that the tumor had been growing inside me for 12 years. And what brought this about was that one day I passed blood in my urine. I had no physical symptoms. I had a little, which I look back on now, and the doctors tell me it was probably the systematic warnings that my body was giving me. I had a little nagging backache back by my right kidney. But I had been in different altercations with people and had been banged up a little bit, and I contributed to just, you know, chronologically getting old, and that's just the aches and pains that everybody has to go through. And then when I passed blood, obviously, I knew there was an extreme urgent matter that I had to go to the doctors, and I did so right away. And you also need to know that my background is Cherokee Indian, about one-eighth Cherokee and a quarter Cherokee Indian. I was always enamored by the way that they lived years ago, and I always prided myself on being a Cherokee Indian. Wherever I could, I taught my children to respect the earth and love the earth and be everything that we could be naturally. And so this was a mindset of mine growing up and living as an adult as well. And when I went to the doctors and they started doing their diagnosis and testing and stuff, my general practitioner referred me obviously to a urologist. And after a series of tests over several days, they brought me in, and the doctor, the urologist, he said, I want you to come in. We need to talk. It's very serious. And I told him, well, my children, and I was dating a woman at the time who really introduced me to macrobiotics, and we all went to the doctor's office, and he wouldn't let the kids in because he thought it was too dramatic for them. And they're all adults, by the way. They're not like teenagers. They're all over 25. And I knew it was bad because he said, I can't discuss this in front of your children. That's something that's going to be too radical for them. And I said, hey, they've been through a lot of things in their lives, and this would just be another one that we do together as a family. And I say that because it's so important for people to have the support. And when I went in, they all came in, and their feathers were a little bit ruffled because the doctor didn't want to tell everybody at one time. He wanted me to be able to tell them. And the guy broke down in tears emotionally about the diagnosis and the prognosis, which obviously wasn't very good. He told me that the situation was very grave. He had not seen a case like this before. There was a tumor the size of a football, and that he would recommend that I get Sloan Kettering to give a second opinion. And at that time, prior to that, I had already called Sloan Kettering, and I had made an appointment to come and see a doctor up there, the same doctor that he recommended, who he said was the best in the industry. So went from there up to Sloan Kettering, went through a series, a battery of tests, and the first thing they said, you got a 50-50 chance of living or through the surgery. And you have to understand, too, that doctors will not tell you those kind of things unless you are very, very adamant about you want to know. And that's the way I am. That's the way I've always been. I want to know what I've got going in, and I want to know what I need to do to get through it. And if I'm not going to get through it, I want to make sure that I'm prepared, and everybody around me was prepared. Maybe it was because of the lifestyle that I lived in law enforcement, and I don't know what it was, but I just wanted to know. And so many times people just go to the doctors and they accept what they tell them, and they walk through the paces like cattle on the way to slaughter, because they think that the doctors are, and listen, don't get me wrong, now throughout this whole thing, if I get in a car accident, I want to go to the hospital and I want to be put together again by doctors. But there are certain areas, and these are one of them, in which they're just like us. They're a little bit more well trained, but they have a they are trained in the pharmaceutical and surgical end of medicine. And so I didn't care what the training was. And back then I wasn't really even knowledgeable of macrobiotics. All I knew is he was a traditional doctor. He knew what he should have been able to tell me. When he told me that he couldn't give me percentages, I pushed him on it. And I finally got out that it was 50% chance of getting through that particular surgery. So we went through it, and I still didn't know anything about narcotics, but I had started doing some research on the line, and the friend that I was dating at the time, she had mentioned macrobiotics, but I kind of poo-pooed it. I was reading everything online, and my kids were researching and everything else. So we got through the surgery. The doctor told me they got it all, and for me to go home and just resume my normal lifestyle. And I had researched enough to know that diet played a major role in our health and in the prevention, and I didn't think the healing at that time of disease. But I did know it, prevention. I did feel that way strongly. And one of the books that I read was by Bill Cosby, the comedian, where he had quadruple bypass, and they served them eggs and bacon the following morning, and he wrote a book that you are what you eat, and it scares me half to death. That was the name of the book. So when my doctor told me I'd go back and resume my normal diet, I told them, well, and you have to understand, I was in a different lifestyle then. I'd come home from work, and I would have two or three cocktails, and then I'd have steak and potatoes and cook everything either on a grill or in a microwave. I was a bachelor, and so I didn't know anything about really cooking. But I did know from what I read that the way I was eating wasn't good. And obviously I had a time to reflect on that while convalescing and or preparing for that surgery. And he just told me to go back and continue what I was doing. And I did modify my diet, pretty much went vegan at that time till I wanted to continue to learn about diet and how it related to health. So I came back in a couple times for checkups, and then on the third one, the doctor said that the cancer had metastasized into my liver and my lungs, and after a period of about 6 weeks, they determined that the tumor had grown. The tumors had grown about 35% in 6 weeks, and their determination was that I needed to go on a clinical trial drug called interferon. It was just like a chemotherapy type drug.
Is that like it's supposed to dissolve the cancer cells or destroy the cancer cells?
No, what they told me was that there was no cure for renal cell carcinoma, and that their hope was that this clinical trial drug might give me a couple more months. They told me that I had a 15% chance of living a year, and that I needed to get my affairs in order, and maybe this drug would give me a couple months. And again, when they told me what about the metastasis of the cancer in my liver and my lungs, my first response was, what's my shot? What's my chances? What are the percentage? And they would tell me, well, we can't tell you that. And I'd say, listen, and I was a lot more aggressive than I am today. So I would tell them, look, I know that you do these every day. So you have to have some experience and some numbers. So don't BS me. Give me the truth. I need the facts. I need to know what I'm up against. And finally, they gave me that 15% number, and I said, "Okay, I know what I got to do. I do have to get my affairs in order." And I just was not in a mindset that I was going to accept that. And I told them that. They looked at me like I was kind of crazy, but I had been in life-threatening situations in law enforcement, and I just believed that God didn't have me on this earth to go out on a steel table without having something else in life for me to contribute to. And I believed that with all my heart, and my determination was to find something, I didn't know what it was, that would help me continue my life on this earth, and didn't know what I was going to do to help people. I didn't know that I was going to be put in a situation where I'd be able to share this vital information with people. But as time went on, they recommended a clinical trial drug, and I did participate for about 4 or 5 treatments. And every time I took this treatment, it was like, and I had witnessed heroin addicts going cold turkey, where they couldn't hold a glass of water, and they had the cramps and the chills and the fever and all that other stuff going on. This was just as bad, if not worse. I could not hold a glass of water. And it would be like perfect clockwork. They would give me the injection at 2:00 in the afternoon, and they said at 10:00 tonight you'll start to feel the side effects. And I always joke about this, because when I was in homicide or narcotics and I went to the hospital with a victim, the doctors would lean over their bed and they would utter these descriptive words, just like the doctors were telling me these definitions of what they deemed appropriate. They would tell some patient that was just shot and stabbed that what they were going to do to him would be a little bit uncomfortable, and then they would inflict excruciating pain on them in their treatment. And so when the doctor told me that I was going to have a little bit of a flu-like symptom, I should have probably understood what their definition was, because it was much more severe than any flu that I've ever had. I would get home, and at 10 o'clock, I'd go through, like, heroin withdrawals, side effects, and it would last for days. And just about the fifth day, I would wind up starting to have some type of clarity of thinking, and without any real extreme side effects. And then I'd go back in for another treatment. Well, about four or five of those treatments, they always took a blood test before and a urine test, a urine sample, and they tell me they can't give me any more medicine. And I said, why not? And they said, because your body has so adversely reacted to it, we need your body to be off of medicine for 8 weeks, and then we'll bring you back and we'll try another path. Until your body heals, we can't really give you any more medicine. So that was kind of an eye-opener. And so at that point, I had read up on macrobiotics. I hadn't met with a counselor. Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I did meet with Elaine Nussbaum, and I had just started that last week. I just started macrobiotics, and I told them I was going to go on this diet. And they said, well, what is this diet? And I told them what it was, no meat, no sugar, no dairy. And they said, well, that's not going to heal you, but it's not going to hurt you either, I don't suppose, but you have to be careful because you got to get your protein and your nutrients and all this other stuff. And at that time, you know, what did I know about the macrobiotic diet? I didn't know anything except I met this wonderful young lady who was about 67 or 70 years old, and she was 70 years young. She was vibrant for her age and what she had been through. She was a 25-year ovarian cancer survivor. So when I went to talk to her, I was amazed at to where she was at in her life compared to what the typical prognosis is for that. So went home and had already started learning about the diet, and came back in 30 days. I came back to the doctors, and my blood pressure had gone from sky high. I had always been on medicine for blood pressure, and I, no matter what I did in physical exercise or diet, I could not get my blood pressure under control. 30 days on this diet, my blood pressure without medicine was 120 over 70, and that's what it is today. And my cholesterol was about 133 from up around 240 in 30 days' time. I knew something, I felt it, but that was the proof that the macrobiotic diet that I was on, and I was on a healing diet, that it was doing something amazing to my body, although I still had the tumors. And when I went back after, I guess about the second month on this diet, the tumors had started to reduce themselves by about 20%. And over a seven-month period, the tumors were totally eradicated, and I was diagnosed as being tumor-free. You know, it was a wonderful experience to be able to walk into that office and have them tell me that. There was a lot in between, obviously, and I'll certainly answer any questions about that. But I know that for some of you on the phone that I know personally, that you're on that track right now, and it isn't easy to make a change. Now, the type of personality that I am, if I put my mind to something, I know I'm going to do it, and I'm going to stick with it. And when we went home from Elaine Nussbaum that day, the first thing we did was take everything out of my closets. And I hit it, so to speak, cold turkey. I didn't phase myself out of anything. I just jumped in. And it was funny because when we left Elaine Nussbaum's office, the first thing we wanted to do is have lunch, and we went to a Japanese restaurant. And I had never seen, or I'm sure I've seen it before, but I had never eaten edamame. And even then, I didn't know what it was, but we ate in a Japanese restaurant. We got what the Japanese restaurant menu would allow us to eat. And I watched this young couple feeding each other edamame. I didn't know what it was until I went to a summer conference in the Kushi Institute and learned about edamame. And I look back at that now and chuckle because I didn't know anything. I mean, the foods, like many of you that are on a diet now for health reasons or even for terminal illness, when we get on this, it's like, holy mackerel, what are you talking about? You know, burdock root and daikon carrots and eating seaweed and all this other stuff. But if you're up against the wall, like I was and some of you have been, I'm sure, with health, it doesn't make any difference what it is. It's not going to hurt you, and it's certainly going to improve your health and your wellness of in any life that you're in, whether you're sick or healthy. It's going to make it better. So the very strict macrobiotic diet part of it, have a lot of people come to me and say they don't know if they can give up meat and or sugar or dairy and that type of thing, and I just tell them, you know, you have to look at this as a choice that we all make, like so many other choices in life. You can choose to give up those things that harmed us and put us in that condition and have a shot at surviving, or you can choose just to continue doing what you're doing, and if you continue doing what you're doing, most times you're going to continue to get what you're getting, which isn't, in my situation, wasn't a good thing, a good place to be. So I can say that without macrobiotics, I would not be here today, no doubt about it. Without the wonderful lady that I was dating, without her in my life at the time, and everything happens for a reason, there's no doubt I would have probably been dead. No doubt whatsoever, because I wouldn't have had anybody to expose me to macrobiotics. And I must add that macrobiotics came through her from her mother, who had rheumatoid arthritis, and she had met Elaine Nussbaum while taking her mother up there for treatment one time, probably 10 years before this happened. So it's amazing, you know, the universe and life puts us, God puts us in a path, and sometimes we don't know what that is. And I remember my kids being terrified, and my only thing to help them, you know, stay at peace was that I believed that God had put me here on this path, and I didn't know why, but there would be a reason at the end of the tunnel, so that's for sure. And so once I convalesced and got my strength back, I guess I spent about 2 years just doing nothing but learning about macrobiotics and practicing macrobiotics, and then having covered dish dishes here at the house, trying to teach everybody what I'd learned. And I was still a novice. I'm still a novice at it. But I believe in paying things forward. So we would invite people over to my house. We would have, you know, covered dish, and everybody would bring something, or a potluck, and everybody would bring something, and we try to educate ourselves about what macrobiotic was, and to let everybody know that that it was a good food, and share it with people. Shortly thereafter, I created a website, a resource website that I call Cooking Number 4 Life. It's cooking, the numeric 4, life.com. And on that, it tells my story. It has a bunch of resources, because I remember trying to find, and my family trying to find, information on the internet, and it was all scattered all over the place. I said to myself, if I could put everything together, and it's impossible to put it all together, but if I could put things together in somewhat of a significant flowing information guide for people to read, educate themselves, and move on forward, then I would be in a position to help people do what people helped me. And then people at the Cushy Institute are just awesome. Denny Waxman, I've been to both Denny, the Cushy Institute, and also Ginny Harper is another great friend of mine who's has helped me from time to time. We've become very, very good friends. She's a wonderful lady. And she's doing a great job in her practice as Denny and the Cushy Institute, Judy and Larry McKenna, who run the Way to Health. These people just exude love and kindness, and they get paid pennies as to what it's really worth. And for that, you know, you learn that, and especially coming from a background where I was at, where I dealt with 95% of my job, I dealt with the 5% of the negativity of society day in and day out. So when I experience, and I know there's, even in that career, I saw good things and good people, but when I experienced this, and once I started eating the food, and in case you're not aware of it, you know, the food has a very, very strong impact as to who we are and who we become, as far as, you know, yin and yang, and also being aggressive as opposed to being more considerate and passive and understanding. And I never realized that through my entire life until this happened, until I studied macrobiotics. So today I'm a different person. In my first 6 months on macrobiotics, I lost 65 pounds. That was another plus. And when I go back and I visit with any of my law enforcement friends, they told me I'm half the man I used to be, which I joke around with and say I'm the skeleton of the man I used to be. But I'm more active than all of those guys are today. I have more vitality and more clarity of thinking than most of them. And I'm not bragging. It's just the way it is. Because of what macrobiotics have brought to my life. So I think I'm going to just stop here. Marissa, you probably heard my story as much as I've told it. If there's anything you want me to pull out that I left out, please let me know. But I'd say let's open it up for questions, and then we can better serve the group that's on here.
Yeah. No, again, and like you said, you're not only feeling great, you know, and every day, you know, you're thankful for this food, but you're cancer free, you know. And I mean, what do the doctors say now? which I love to ask. Like, what do the doctors say now?
They crack me up. When I was still going back to the doctors, I had created this website, Cooking for Life, and I would take a pocketful of business cards with the email and website on it. And I would sit in the office in the waiting room, and there'd be 70 people sitting there waiting to go through this process like cattle, and with no hope in their eye. And I would sit next to somebody, and I'd look them in the eye, and they'd say, "I know where you've been." And it wasn't long ago that I was sitting there. And if I don't want to infringe upon your privacy. But I had stage 4 kidney cancer. I have stage 4 kidney cancer. And they told me I'd be dead by now. And I'm still here thanks to food and a lifestyle called macrobiotics. Here's my card. If I can ever do anything for you, please feel free to call. And I still do that today. And I may talk to anywhere from 5 to 15 people a week in my busy schedule with my travel business, which I love. I'll get calls from people all over the world that somebody told them about me or my site, and I'll get a call, and, you know, I talk to them. And I'm not a counselor. I try to be an inspiration to people, and I try to provide them with information. The doctors, you know, I think they kind of like the fact that I didn't come back for CAT scans anymore, because I wouldn't talk bad about the doctors, but I'd give them options that the doctors didn't give. So when they finally told me I had no more tumors, I said, "Well, that's because of the diet." And they looked at me and said, "Well, this is just one of those spontaneous remissions that no one can explain, like a miracle from God." And I say, "Well, I truly believe it's a miracle from God." But like everything else, God puts before us things. If we don't act upon them, you know, it's like the guy that was got caught in the flood, and he was on the first floor, and he was praying to God that somebody would come and rescue him, and that God would rescue him, and they sent a guy in a big truck, and he didn't jump on the truck. He said, "I'm waiting for God to save me." And then the water went up to the second floor, and they sent a boat for him, and he said, "I'm not leaving because I know God's going to save me." And then he went up to the roof, and he got on the roof. They sent a helicopter, and the helicopter couldn't get him on the helicopter because he said, "I know God's going to save me." And then when he died and went to heaven, he said, "God, how come you didn't save me?" And he says, "Well, Joe, you know, I sent you a guy in a truck. I sent you a guy in a boat. I sent you a guy in a helicopter. But you have to take the initiative to help yourself. And so you didn't take what I sent, advantage of what I sent you." And I think that's so true in life. You know, we get put in situations that we a couple things happen. We may not doubt ourselves. We may have the wrong mindset. And believe me, this all starts between the ears. If you think you can beat it, you can. If you think you can't beat it, you're already defeated.
Favorite story is that story about the I sent you three different signs and you didn't.
That's right. That's right.
I call it all the time, and it's all about, you know, it's all about the you ask for help, and sometimes help is right in front of you, and it's your choice. That's what, you know, I too say the same thing. It's your choice to choose whether you want to take this path or do you want to take another path, because the options are there, and everyone has that free will to do whatever they choose to do, to be whoever they choose to be. And, I mean, that's the wonderful thing about life. So, you know, look for those signs and take in everything that's happening around you, and sometimes the answers are right in front of your face, and you don't even realize it. So I love that story.
And the other thing, Marissa, and everybody on the line, is that I'm a firm believer, and I've learned this in my law enforcement career, I've learned it in my business career, and I've learned it with macrobiotics. When you're in a situation and you want to change where you're at, you have to surround yourself with people that are going to support what you're doing and what you want. If you want to become a millionaire, you don't go to the homeless people and hang out with them. You want to learn what to do. You have to go to people who have done it. And the same thing with health. You can't hang around people and expect people that are eating or not eating healthy. I'm not saying ostracize ourselves, but from the learning standpoint, you have to put yourself around people that you can learn from that are doing it properly and that have the same mindset as you. Now, you know, my kids, some of them eat this way, some of them don't. I've got four children, and my youngest daughter eats better than most of them, and a couple of my kids, they still eat meat and potatoes. They don't even think about eating vegetables because they tell me, "Dad, if I get cancer, then I'll get on that diet." Well, then it's too late. I don't want you to risk that. Not that it's too late, but anyway, I mean, everybody has a different perspective, and you can't change that. It breaks my heart when people come to me, and I sit down, I'll make them lunch, and have lunch with them to try to inspire them and give them some direction to get to a counselor and who to go see and what they should be doing, and give them some dietary changes to start off with, even before they get to the counselor. And they sit there and they'll eat lunch with me, and then they'll say, after a couple of weeks after going to a counselor, they'll call me up and they'll say, "Bob, I can't give up coffee, I can't give up sugar, I can't give up dairy," whatever it may be. And I'll say to them, you know, "Well, that's your choice." But it breaks my heart because, and I'll give you a real quick story. There was a young guy, I say young, he was younger than me by about 10 years, 15 years, who I trained in narcotics, how to draw up search warrants, how to kick in doors and arrest people and do undercover work. And then when I left, he ultimately, about 8 years later, became the commanding officer that I was. And he also was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer, went through the same process, the same doctors, took him to Denny Waxman. And that was a funny story in and of itself. When Denny went to take his shoes, examine his feet, Nick had a he was still working in law enforcement. He had an ankle holster with a PPK-38 on his ankle. I thought Denny was going to have a heart attack. But Nick wanted to do this, but his wife was not supportive, and she didn't believe in it. And it tainted his belief and judgment. And he moved away, got away from macrobiotics, and subsequently died about a year and a half later. So, you know, I love the guy, but there's nothing I can do. And there's nothing we can do. All we can do is stand by our convictions and our knowledge of what we know that we know that we know. And there will be people that come into our lives, and they will doubt what happened or how it happened, but never let them take that away from you, and don't let them take that away from you sharing with other people that it only takes, you know, one person to make a difference. And it's like the person who is the couple that was walking down the beach, and, you know, there's down in South Carolina, this beach is loaded with starfish that are churned up from the sea and put onto the beach, and the starfish die on the beach. And this couple's walking down the beach, and he's picking them up, and he's throwing them in. And he did two or three, and the woman that he was with said, "Why you keep on throwing them back in? They're all going to die anyway." And he looked at her, picked up another one, and threw that one in back into the ocean. And he says, and she said, "Because it doesn't matter." And he picked that next one up, and he said, "To that one, if he lives, it matters." And that's the way we have to think about what we do in macrobiotics. If you hit one person, if you get one person, and I just pray every night that, you know, that what I've been through, I can help somebody else, and change their lives like it's changed mine. And I thank God for everybody that came into my life that I didn't even know before this, that treat me like a brother, and it's just an amazing group of people. So let me stop talking and answering some questions.
Yeah, no. I mean, I love to hear you talk. So it's just so interesting everything you have to say. But yes, I'd love to open it up to question and answers now. So if you do have a question, you can dial 5-star on your phone, and I'll be able to see whoever is chiming in, or any questions or comments. I know Bob will be more than happy to ask them or hear from you, I'm sure. So he's got a lot of inspiration to share. I know it's been been a pleasure to listen to you, because this is so inspiring for someone who's so close to just, you know, almost not making it. And then, I mean, look, how many years has it been?
Almost 8 years now.
That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. And just so gets me.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I tell everybody that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, you stick to it. I love it. I really do. But does anyone have any comments? You don't have any questions right now, so. And if you do have a question that you want to think, if you think of after the fact, again, you can go to fiacushi.com, and under Bob Michael's page, you can put a question and answer there, a comment there. Oh, we have one question from Cheryl. So, hi, Cheryl.
Oh. That was an awesome story. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. My pleasure.
If you ever...
Hello?
I wanted to know if Bob ever cheated. Because Elaine Nussbaum, in her book, she wrote, "Never did it pass my lips." And I had a problem with little nibbles of like a corn chip or a granola. I just needed something crunchy. And did you ever have cravings that you couldn't overcome?
You know, I think I was a big chicken, because Elaine Nussbaum told me the same thing. She said, "If you want to beat this, Bob, you can do it, but you can't cheat."
You can't. You got the warning.
And I did not cheat. And, you know, I eat now when I'm traveling, like I took this trip to Los Cabos for 5 days, and I took my own rice and I took miso, but I didn't eat a normal macrobiotic. I didn't eat any meat. I didn't eat any sugar, and I didn't eat any dairy products. But I certainly didn't eat the organic, healthy food that I normally eat. And so that's the times that I may cheat. And then when I come back home, I get on a daikon and carrot drink, cleanse for about 7 days, and hopefully get myself back balanced out. But no, I never did cheat. And I'll tell you a funny story. I had been clean, and then I went from the Kushi Institute. I wanted to get another macrobiotic counselor in my life, and I had met Denny, and I was impressed with him. And so I went and I got a consultation with him, and he fine-tuned me a little bit. And I went back for a second one about 4 months later, and he says, "Man, you got to lighten up. Go have a beer." I said, "What? I can have a beer?" He said, "Oh yeah, you need a beer. You're too tight. You're too strict. But let the counselor tell you that. Don't you judge yourself by that."
Exactly.
And you know, there's other things that we can, you know, in macrobiotics, the balance, the yin yang philosophy, that if we're craving something, pick up the book if you don't know the answer, and if you can't talk to your counselor, and figure out what will neutralize that particular craving, because there's other foods in macrobiotic that will satisfy that without going, you know, and doing the things that will hurt us.
I just saw Denny Friday, and you know what he recommended? First, he looked like he saw a ghost when I fessed up about it, and he told me not to do it anymore. I said, "Well, they were organic chips," and he said, "Good, you'll just get organic cancer." I was like, "Okay," but he said it was from too much of the same grain, like I wasn't varying everything enough. So now I have this
balance,
great opportunity, to add more oats and more couscous and more noodles. So I'm excited about that.
That's great. You're doing a great job, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Thanks.
You know, I just want to throw in a little comment about the cheating. You know, I'm starting to think, like, I hate when people say, "Oh, I cheated," and, you know, "Oh, I'm so discouraged. Like, that's it. I can't do this because I had a cookie today." And, you know, I think that's all, you have to kind of look at it as all humans. They're humans, and it's still food. It's still natural. And if you have a cookie, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, just move on and do something that you know that's going to help get rid of that cookie and, you know, keep going with it. I feel like a lot of people are so discouraged from, you know, doing this drastic diet change because they're afraid that if they cheat, that's it. They failed. It's over and I'm not going to do it, because you know what? It's still working. And I am so guilty of that. You know, how many times, how many mishaps I've had that, you know, I was doing really well for a while and then I would like crash and they would get off the diet and I go off course and then I'm like, "No, I got to get back on." And I go back on and then again I would hit a wall and then I would kind of teeter back and forth. And, you know, that's why it took me so long to recover myself. But I'm still here. I still got to that point. And then after a while, I didn't want to, you know, I don't get those cravings anymore and I don't, you know, want those same things. I crave that good food, and it's become so much easier. It's now natural. It's now my life. But it took a while, and just don't get discouraged. So just wanted to say that.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Marissa. One of the things when I do lectures, and I don't know how many people are just listening tonight because they want to change your diet to be healthy. I tell people when they're not ill, if they're not sick, they're just looking, or they don't have any, you know, clinical diagnosis of being ill, that they can move into this in a very subtle way, a little bit at a time. And by just changing a few things in their diet, you know, a little bit at a time, baby steps, find out what works for them, and then incorporate different things over a slower period of time, and they can do drastically great things over a period of time that will change the course of their health. They don't have to do it like, you know, some of us had to because we didn't have this information ahead of us or didn't believe it. And that's the part, quite frankly, you know, if somebody would have come to me and I wasn't sick and they told me, hey, you need to go on a macrobiotic diet to be healthy, I probably wouldn't have believed them either. But, you know, when you're against that wall, you know, your belief system opens up. It's like I always say, your mind is like a parachute. It's always better when it's open.
Yeah.
About everything, really. So.
So do we have any more questions out there? Yes, we do. We have one more question from, hold on, I'm going to, yes, hi, from 270.
Right. I just wanted to, you know, contribute that I've been having my struggles since beginning the macrobiotic program, and, you know, I have found various tricks to help, you know, stay with anything over the years, and one of them that I'm finding that's useful now is to journal. You know, I made a little page about things, and before I do something that goes off the diet, and I carry it, it's small enough to carry my purse, and when I think about going off or doing something off, I just write down the time of day, and I write down what it is that I'm going off on, and I sort of try to make myself write something, and sometimes that's enough to just make me pull up my adult self and not do it. But even if I do, then I'm consciously doing it, and I can go back later and say, oh, well, you know, it's obvious why I was craving that. It had been 7 hours since I'd eaten it. So, you know, that's just one of those little tricks that might work for you, is to write things, you know, write things down and sort of have a log of why you know, maybe it'll help you in figuring out why, and so that you can not do it and also not do it going forward.
That's a good idea. Everything that you can do to bring that, keep a consciousness about it, it will help. And that's a great idea.
That's all I was going to say.
Very good. Thanks for your input.
Thanks so much, yeah. So, Cheryl, do you have another question, or am I just not able to? Do you have another question, Cheryl? I'm sorry.
No, it just does that automatically for some
okay.
reason.
Okay. All right, no, it was just kept popping up, and I'm like, oh, maybe she's keep chiming in, so... Well, if that's, I think that's, you know, that's about 10 o'clock now, so I'm just going to wrap it up. Again, I want to say thank you so much for everyone who called in, and thanks for listening. Again, if you have any questions, afterthoughts, after the fact, just go to fiakushi.com. You can go /miracles/, and you can go right to Bob Michael's story and just make a comment there, and Bob will let you know how to sign in and respond back to people's comments. So, and thank you so much again, Bob, for sharing such an amazing story. It's really always an inspiration to hear it, and I can't hear it enough. And so, yeah.
Pleasure is all mine.
Thanks. Oh, and I want to say your website. I just want to put that out there one more time. That's cookingforlife.org. Is that it?
.com. It actually is .org or .com. It's cooking the numeric for life.com.
.com. Okay, great. It's on. It's next to your name as .org. So, but
okay. I have actually both sites, so it all goes to the same place.
Good. So great. So thank you again. And so this call has been recorded, and if you'd like to recommend it to someone or listen back to it, you can go to the FIA's website and listen to it there. So I'm going to stop the recording now.